Greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news. But stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show. We don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. So glad to have you back. It's been a tumultuous week here at the McBurney compound, what with the news and all. But our personal lives have been okay because, well, our daughters are just so amazingly cute. It's just amazing. Every day, we need to remember to get down on our knees and thank God for our children, because I'm convinced that's the only reason that he hasn't decided to just shuffle it all right back through and just put an end to it all. And my kids are a great case in point. But the news, well, the news this week, well, what can I suppose I should just jump in. There's an awful lot to get to, and I want to start with a story out of London. Do I want to start there, or do I want to start with Glenn Beck's? Nah, we'll get to Glenn Beck in due order. Unlike Barack Obama, we here at The Worldview did not ignore Glenn's rally there in New York. But we'll get to that in due course. Let's start in London. British Airways has apologized after a crew member mistakenly played an emergency message warning passengers that the plane they were on was about to plunge into the sea. Yeah, apparently somebody hit the wrong button. And after they played a message telling people to buckle their seatbelts, another message came on saying we're about to make an emergency water landing. Which, that could be distressing, let's face it, if you're on a flight and you happen to be over water and you hear that come over the intercom. That could be a bit disturbing. In fact, there was an interview, the Sun Note newspaper, quoted one passenger as saying, quote, "I can't think of anything worse than being told your plane is about to crash," unquote. Of course, your plane actually crashing would be a lot worse. So, just a minor correction. Plane actually plunging into the sea would have been a lot worse than hearing your plane was about to crash. And then finding out that it was all just a mistake made by another, well, what do they call them now? Flight attendant. Male stewardess, perhaps. But it was just a mistake. So calm down. All right. Now, tumultuous news. The mathematician behind the Hindenburg omen. Have you heard about this? This is from Forbes. The mathematician behind the Hindenburg omen has gotten out of stocks just a little more than a week before September, when the stock market crash may happen. Now, the Hindenburg omen is a set of indicators that I can't really understand. But Jim Miecka, he says it's sort of like a funnel cloud. He says it doesn't mean the stock market's going to crash, but it's a high probability, and he has taken his change out of the game. According to Forbes, the Hindenburg omen has preceded every crash since 1987, but it has also popped up plenty of times without any subsequent market decline. So we don't know exactly what's going to happen, but we've got a funnel cloud on the horizon in the form of the Hindenburg omen, and the fellow who came up with it, he's out. He's sitting on the sidelines. He's in cash. Thank you very much. Apparently, according to Reuters, also from May through July, investors have taken a net $44 billion out of domestic equity funds and billions more out of exchange-traded funds focused on U.S. equities. Apparently, there have been other indicators over this summer that give some pause about jumping into the stock market. Apparently, the death cross was achieved at some point in July. I don't know what the death cross is, but that doesn't sound good. The death cross? I might be getting out, too. Anyway, I don't know what's going to happen to the economy. I'm an eternal optimist because I've got these beautiful children, and I know that I'm always guaranteed tomorrow because I am in Jesus Christ. So I'm an eternal optimist, but as far as the economy in the short term, I'm a pessimist. Let me tell you what happened this week. I was on the phone with a fellow who runs a rather interesting business out of Kansas City, Missouri. He runs an outfit called UsedTires.net. He sells used tires. He buys and sells used tires. And in the course of our conversation, I said, well, you know, with the economy being what it is, business must be pretty good for you. I'm sure people are looking for used tires more now than they were back in the roaring years, back in 05, 06. He said, well, you know, it's funny, but that's not the case. He said, the key to me making money in my business is I have to find quality material. I have to find quality used tires in order to resell them. He said, but Doug, these days people are running them bald. Everybody's running them bald. You can't find a decent used tire anymore. So the used tire omen has reared its ugly head. Everybody's running their tires bald, and they're a bit nervous about whether or not the socialists are actually trying to collapse the economy on purpose. Is it possible? I think it's possible. Because, you know, the socialists who run the government and the government employees, 99% of those people are not going to be hurt by an economic collapse. Their nests are feathered, so to speak. It's you and I out here in the free market that are going to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous misfortune if indeed the progressives, the socialists, the stone Marxists that now run the government actually want to collapse the economy. And I just wouldn't put it past them. Speaking of people with their nests feathered, a story out of Washington, D.C. I got this from CNN. Shirley Sherrod, you remember Shirley Sherrod, caused some consternation with remarks she made before an NAACP crowd, talking about how she was shucking and jiving a white farmer in the NAACP crowd was down there laughing and cheering and saying, oh yeah, girl, you go, girl. Anyway, Shirley Sherrod has declined an offer. Apparently last Tuesday an offer was proffered to serve as the agriculture agencies, the agriculture department's deputy director of the Office of Advocacy and Outreach, whatever that is. They just created this job out of thin air and offered it to her because, well, they're afraid. Well, let's just get to it. She turned down the job. According to CNN, the newly created position was designed to improve the department's civil rights efforts and image nationwide. So basically, they created a job to try to buy off Sherrod. And she said no. Sherrod met last Tuesday morning with Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack. The two indicated that while Sherrod will not return to the USDA as an official staffer, she is likely to serve in an unofficial advisory capacity to help address issues related to racism in the department. Shirley Sherrod, now an expert on racism. Sherrod, according to CNN, has expressed strong interest in a final settlement of legal claims. However, she's more interested in a final settlement of legal claims made by black farmers against the USDA, as well as lawsuits raised by women, Hispanics, Native Americans. Is there anybody she missed? So see, Shirley sees a much bigger payoff. There's no sense in taking the chump change of a patronage job over at the USDA when she can shoehorn her way into some major, massive financial settlements related to all of the minorities upon whose neck the man has his boot. The man, by the way, that's you and me out here in the free market. Shirley Sherrod will not suffer when the financial collapse comes. Her and her ilk will do just fine. They're a part of a class that are separate from you and I. I love the new term, the ruling class. A great article, by the way, in the American Spectator. If you haven't had a chance to read it, Andrew Koldvilja, if that's how you pronounce his name, wrote an article called The Ruling Class, and you should read it. I think he's even going to turn it into a book. It was so well received. It's like listening to Glenn Beck if he had an education. When you read Anthony Codvilla. Anyway, give it a read. It's worth a read. All right, now let's move into the politics file. I've got a story here from the Atlantic Monthly. I'll just spit it out. President Bush campaign manager from 2004, one Ken Melman, has came out and told family, friends, and associates that he's a homosexual. Now, the article here says that he came out and told them he was gay, but I didn't want to confuse you by making you think that he was happy, although the homosexuals have done a pretty good job of capturing that term and applying to it their own definition. He's come out and said he's a homosexual, and not only that, he wants to become an advocate for gay marriage. Yes, he says family, friends, former colleagues, current colleagues, they've all been wonderful and supportive. And he says the process of coming out as a deviant, it's made him a happier and a better person. He says, quote, "It's something I wish I'd done years ago," unquote. He insists that President Bush was no homophobe, by the way. And if I'm not mistaken, did George W. Bush make a statement on this week? I think he did. I think he came out and he said if he wasn't married to Laura, he would seriously consider marrying Ken Melman. George W. Bush. No, I made that up. That's not true. But I'm sure George W. Bush would welcome Melman with open arms into the congregation there at whatever United Methodist Church it is that George W. Bush attends down there in Texas. What does Mr. Melman have to say for himself? How does he acquit himself here? In public, in front of God and everybody, he says, quote, "What I do regret and think about a lot is that one of the things that I talked a lot about in politics was how I tried to expand the party into neighborhoods where the message wasn't always heard. I didn't do this in the gay community at all, even though I went to as many gay bars and bathhouses as I could after hours." All right, I made that last part up. But anyway, a Bush campaign manager, another Republican, comes out flaming in public, and it's just depressing, frankly. It's just depressing. And that leads us into this story. Probably the major story of the week is Glenn Beck's... Do I want to do Glenn Beck right now? I suppose I have to. It's a big story. Glenn Beck had a rally there at the Capitol. And, roughly 500,000 people attended, 500,000. That's a pretty good crowd. According to the New York Times, they say that the gathering was in part a religious revival, part history lecture, and the crowd was a mix of groups that have come together under the Tea Party umbrella. The New York Times says the program was distinctively different than most Tea Party rallies. Tea parties have said they want to focus on fiscal conservative and not risk alienating people by talking about religion or social issues. But Beck's rally on Saturday was overtly religious, filled with gospel music and speeches that were more like sermons. Beck said, quote, "Something that is beyond man is happening. America today begins to turn back to God," said Glenn Beck in front of 500,000 conservatives gathered on the Mall. I'm a bit conflicted about all this. I mean, there's an awful lot of truth in what Glenn Beck has to say. I have to admit that. I listen to Glenn Beck. I watch Glenn Beck.
You cry with him.
Sometimes I cry with Glenn Beck. Glenn does have a tendency to tear up. But, you know, as a Bible-thumping conservative, right-wing, fundamentalist Christian, can I be comfortable with the fact that basically a pagan is now leading, you know, I mean, he led this call to God and produced the largest outdoor gathering of Christian conservatives in the history of the country. And he's a Mormon, which, I mean, to me, that's paganism. Well, not just to me, it's paganism. So can a pagan... actually turn a nation or any group of people toward God? And I've been thinking about this, and I thought, well, you know, Herod rebuilt the temple. He didn't do that because he had a conversion. He did it for political reasons. But Herod rebuilt the temple. Persian King Darius, he authorized the rebuilding of Jerusalem. And if I'm not mistaken, he funded a large part of it. Nebuchadnezzar elevated Daniel. The Pharaoh in Egypt elevated Joseph. Godly men who turned many hearts toward God. And just this past year in Colorado, as we worked to put a pro-life initiative on the ballot, a pro-life initiative to teach people that our rights come from God and not from the government, and that we're created in the image of God, and that's why we have rights, the personhood initiative, an agnostic was a key at the heart of the organization, putting personhood on the ballot in Colorado. So I guess this is where Christianity is. It's in the same spot, I think, that Judaism found itself in so many times over the centuries, that there just were so few godly men left, and the culture was so inoculated against true religion and worshiping the living God, that it ended up being a pagan. Whether it was a king or a pharaoh or an agnostic who did the work necessary to wake up the Christians. The heat and the dust. Increase my desolation. In God we've chosen. Audio engineer going through the newspaper here. She's handed me the USA Weekend magazine out of the newspaper. Here is Anderson Cooper sitting on, I don't know, some remains, some debris down there in Louisiana. 5 years after Katrina, the big headline. What? Anderson Cooper.
Then?
What's that?
That's not then.
No, this is a picture from probably last week.
Oh.
It's just they haven't cleaned all the mud off a lot of stuff down there. But yeah, Anderson Cooper. It was a nice ride, Anderson. I hope you saved some money. Oh, and then on the inside, let's see, what section was this? And this is the Denver Post, the politics section. We have an advertisement here. Same-day doctor appointments, $160. Get legal, get compassionate care. It's a medical marijuana ad. Right there in the newspaper. Get legal. Don't you have to get sick first? I don't think so. I think you can just come down and see Dr. Sheboygan, and he'll diagnose whatever dread disease you have, and then you can buy your drugs from a government-authorized dope dealer. All right, I appreciate that. Bit of a distraction there, but a fun one, nevertheless. Now let's get back to politics. From the New York Daily News, I talked about the Hindenburg omen, the Death Cross, the UsedTires.net omen. By the way, if you need used tires, please go to UsedTires.net. Because if there is any quality product out there, I can assure you that Chris is the man to find it and to hook you up with your used tires. That's UsedTires.net. Wait a minute, we don't tolerate sponsors on this show. He doesn't sponsor the show. But all these omens are in the air. And just so you know that the top members of the ruling class are on top of it, according to New York Daily News, Mayor Bloomberg flew up to Martha's Vineyard last week and played a round of golf with Barry Ho, and they talked about the economy. Apparently, they had a 15-minute discussion about the economy before they teed it off and fired up their cigars. Well, we probably should be thankful. I mean, you know, they only talked for 15 minutes. How much damage could they possibly do in 15 minutes? I say, let's put Barry on the track nonstop until the end of his first term. Let's keep him out there with the sticks on the track so that he can't inflict any more harm upon you and I out here sinking or swimming in the free market economy that we love so much. All right. More news on Barry Ho from the Politics File. This is from the Telegraph in London. President Barry Ho will visit Jerusalem in coming months to press for a Middle East peace deal to be signed this year and implemented within a decade. That was according to a leaked White House report. Barry is going to visit Jerusalem, Ramallah. The president, he's got a peace plan. Not only does he have a plan for the economy and a plan for how to attack that putt on the 17th green, he also has a plan for Middle East peace, and that plan calls for Israel and the Palestinian Authority to hold a series of regular meetings over the coming year. Yeah, well, that's always worked in the past, Barry. That's brilliant. Why didn't we think of that? Obviously, the smartest man ever to achieve the office of President of the United States. A real, really thinking outside the box, Barry. Mr. Obama says he has set Middle East peace as one of his top foreign policy goals. Now, how many top goals can you have? It would seem to me you could have one top goal, and then everything else would be subservient to that, or listed later down the list. But Barry's got a lot of top priorities. Let's see. Do I want to do any? I don't really care about Barry's peace plan. Obviously, realizing that he's going to be a one-term president, he's like a la Jimmy Carter. He wants to pull a rabbit out of his hat over in the Middle East. And I wonder how the golf is over in Palestine this time of year. Barry will definitely find out. All right, now should we do? Let's do some justice news, some domestic tranquility news. Because we care about justice here at the Weekly Worldview, and we know you do too. So let's start. Well, let's just go to live on the internet. This just crossed the wire from August 7th to August 20th, according to the Las Vegas Review Journal. From August 7th to August 20th, there were 5 murder suicides in Las Vegas. 10 people are dead. That's 2 weeks? That's about 2 weeks. 5 murder suicides, and that's just in Las Vegas. The Las Vegas Review Journal blames it on the economy. Yeah, they blame the spike in murder suicides on the economy for whatever that's worth. But let's go to the Associated Press from Phoenix. Police say a suburban Phoenix man accused of putting his infant son in a freezer has been arrested on charges of child abuse. Chance Cracky. It's K-R-A-C-K-E. Chance Crack is the fella's name. He told police he was high on methamphetamine when he placed his son in the freezer back on August 16th. He was preparing food when he put the boy on the bottom shelf of his freezer and closed the door because he says the kitchen floor was too filthy to put the lad on the floor. So he put him in the freezer, which was probably a cleaner environment than this Skechers floor. He says he removed the baby after a few minutes when it began to cry. Police say the 7-month-old child suffered only a forehead laceration from the freezer door. The child is going to be fine. Crack, who was on meth, was arrested last week and faces a charge of child endangerment and possession of drug paraphernalia. that should be in the parenthood file, the state of parenthood. In America. Very disturbing. I mean, when your floor is so dirty that you put the kid in the freezer, you might want to sit down and think about the life decisions you've made. Put the meth pipe down and just start considering your place in the universe. All right, let's move on to Irwin, Pennsylvania, from the Associated Press. A Pennsylvania man has agreed to a tentative plea bargain on charges that he threw a television remote control at his 8-year-old son's head because the boy was talking too much. 47-year-old Scott Lackey of Irwin, Pennsylvania, said the child was talking, disturbing him, and he threw a remote control and hit the 8-year-old child in the head. Police say that Lackey blamed the incident on the 8-year-old boy, saying, quote, "The boy wakes up in the morning and starts talking and doesn't stop all day," unquote. So he hit him in the head with a remote. I thought that if your kid wakes up and starts talking, that's a good sign. Anyway, the boy suffered a minor lump on his head, but 47-year-old Scott Lackey is obviously in danger of hellfire and a very stupid person. I mean, if there was anyone who ever needed to be struck in the head, it would be 47-year-old Scott Lackey. Or perhaps struck in the hindquarters with a cane until the flesh falls from his body. So there you have, that should have been in the parenthood file too. I guess the parenthood, parenting, child rearing is all part of the state of domestic tranquility here in the nation. So let's go to, if that wasn't enough to sicken you, let's go to St. Augustine, Florida. A 48-year-old woman was decapitated and dismembered, and her boyfriend has been charged with murder. Parts of 48-year-old Jan Dunn Keller were found wrapped in a tarp in a garage at a home she shared with her live-in shack-up boyfriend, 51-year-old Timothy Dale Rose. Other parts of her body were found buried in a nearby wooded area. The woman, an elementary school teacher, was reported missing last Monday. When detectives went to her home, they found the murderer, Timothy Dale Rose, unconscious with an empty pill bottle and a shotgun nearby. A motive for the killing has not been determined by officials. I will posit my theory, utter rebellion against the creator God of the universe. That's the motive. That's just my gut, just a guess. There in St. Augustine, Florida, a beautiful place to live. But a sad way for someone to die. Just awful. More from the Domestic Tranquility File, Los Angeles, California, from the Associated Press. Authorities were searching last Friday for clues in the killing of three men who were shot in a West Hollywood apartment. The coroner's office identified the victims as Peruz Musazeda and his brother Shahriar Musazeda and their friend Bernard Khalili. These were all members of the Iranian Jewish community. They moved to the United States as young children, and they were slaughtered in an apartment in West Hollywood. Authorities said the men likely knew whoever killed them. There was no sign of a struggle. The door had not been forced open. Neighbors say that the apartment building was said to be generally secure and peaceful. Kind of like America. It's generally secure and peaceful, except for all the people being butchered in our midst. Except for the blood running down the streets. It's generally secure and peaceful here in America. Off of West Hollywood, there you go. Let's see here. We have from Baltimore, the Baltimore Sun. Wilmer Bonilla told police that he and Rodolfo Gonzalez were sitting on some steps when a young girl, armed with a silver handgun, approached and announced a robbery. Because of the obvious age of the robber, the victims began to laugh at this child who had announced she was sticking them up. They laughed. She looked like just a little kid. At which time the suspect fired one shot, grazing the victim, Wilmer Bonilla's head, and striking Jose Carias in the center of his forehead and killing him. A 14-year-old girl. Police identified Artisha Holt, 14 years old, as a suspect in the murder there in Baltimore. What's happening with justice? Why is there so much blood flowing in Las Vegas, Baltimore, Los Angeles, West Hollywood, Irwin, Pennsylvania? What's going on? Is it the economy? I think not. Listen to this. Here's the state of justice, ladies and gentlemen. From the smokinggun.com, the Department of Justice, I said the Department of Justice, is seeking to hire linguists fluent in Ebonics to help monitor, translate, and transcribe the secretly recorded conversations of subjects of narcotics investigations. 9 Ebonics experts will work with the DEA. They'll help investigator decipher the results of telephonic monitoring. So the Justice Department is hiring Ebonics experts, while the citizenry of the nation cringes as the blood runs through our streets. By the way, in contract documents, these job openings are posted on the internet, and on these documents, Ebonics is listed among 114 actual languages. The 114 languages are divided between what the Justice Department calls common languages and exotic languages. Ebonics is listed as a common language spoken solely in the United States. So they won't be able to outsource those jobs, right? You're going to have to find some regular Americans to do those jobs. Oh, by the way, I wanted to just make a note, folks. Last week, we covered probably 20 or 30 topics on the broadcast. The topic that generated the most comments was my analysis of toilet seats. So if any of you are thinking about getting into radio, this is how radio works. You work hard to read the news and develop a sophisticated analysis, and then you toss in a story about toilet seats, and that's pretty much what everybody remembers, was that Doug bought a toilet seat and it won't stay up. It just keeps falling down. So I got tons of comments about the toilet seat story. The best comment of the week comes from a fellow named Dwayne out in Indianapolis. Out in Indiana. Parts unknown in Indiana. Dwayne said, "Doug, you do a very convincing homo lisp. Why don't you just sit down?" The Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. So glad to have you along. Hoping that you pay attention to more than just the mentioning of various household items as we go through the broadcast. I worked really hard to put together a show. You know, I was there's a story about. Well, let's just jump into the war file, and we'll see what you think here. See if this rates higher than toilet seats on your radar screen. More disturbing news from the war front, as you can well imagine. From Mogadishu, Somalia, this is from the Associated Press. Islamic militants wearing Somali military uniforms stormed a hotel favored by lawmakers there in Mogadishu, firing indiscriminately and killing 32 people, including 6 members of parliament. There in Mogadishu. The attack took place just a half mile from the presidential palace. The attack apparently was pulled off by the Islamic insurgent group Al-Shabaab there in Somalia. Al-Shabaab, you'll remember, has links to Al-Qaeda. They claim they have a number of veterans, Islamists, Islamist militant fighters who are veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. And their attacks have grown increasingly sophisticated and deadly, especially in the last few months. You'll remember last month it was Al-Shabaab that claimed credit for the twin bombings in Uganda during the World Cup. You remember those bombings where over 70 people were slaughtered by a militant group there in Somalia, of all places. Somalia! Forget toilet seats in Somalia. They barely have running water in Somalia. And the terrorists seem, for some reason, the terrorists love to live in miserable, destitute, godforsaken places like Somalia. Countries that are so far out and so far away from civilization and Western Christianity. That's where the terrorists like to live, and that's where apparently they have their most success recruiting. Because these are countries that are generations beyond having any link to the real, true religion of the Creator. And so that's where Islamic terrorism festers and grows and recruits most successfully. And it's quite disturbing that this is happening in a country that, if I'm not mistaken, about 20 years ago, we landed on the beach there and brought these people food. We brought them money. We helped them with infrastructure. We killed a number of these warlords. You remember this? Oh, this was like 20 years ago. You know what we didn't bring? We didn't bring the gospel. We didn't bring any Bibles, and we didn't bring any missionaries. You know, you can't send the Marines somewhere for 2 or 3 months and send in the Rangers and assume that you can transform a culture that is satanic for all intents and purposes. It's demonic. It's total evil. It's hell on earth. And that's not what the Marine Corps and the Army Rangers and the Air Cavalry, that's not what they're for. So that's what missionaries are for. But we didn't send any missionaries to Somalia. And now, well, Somalia is worse off than where we found it, frankly, at least in my opinion. And could be a significant threat to us here in the homeland. I mean, the Iranian bomb might make its way to whichever city it blows up in through Mogadishu. And now we're stretched so thin, if the North Koreans decide to act crazy, what are we going to do? You know, people, I want to talk about people who claim that we're under God's judgment. Because in a sense, I agree with them, and in another sense, I want to caution them to be careful. This, what's happening in Somalia, and Iran, and Iraq, and Afghanistan, these are perfect examples of judgment upon our nation. But I don't want anyone to be confused thinking that God is orchestrating these events in order to punish us because we've made him angry. That's not at all what's happening. What's happening is because we have left him and departed from his ways, we're leaving ourselves open to basically being overrun by savages. These people are savages. So in a sense, you could say, yes, we're under judgment. And in a sense, you could say we're under the judgment of God because it's his path from which we have departed that is bringing these judgments upon us. But please don't confuse me with anyone who thinks that God is actually orchestrating events to cause terror and destruction upon America, economic, military, cultural, or otherwise. It's all our own doing. Now, those of you in the audience who are of Jewish extraction, you may be familiar with how the Bible is written. It's written in a very Jewish style. And often there's a literary device used in the Bible to magnify God. There's a line in Isaiah, for example, that says, I created the light and made darkness. And so people take that and they think, oh, well, God does the good and the bad. He does everything. Well, it's just a literary device to magnify the station of God. Because God created light, darkness could be recognized. God is the fountainhead. He's the center of everything. But God is not the author of confusion. God does not do evil. God does not elevate evil men. God does not orchestrate elections or wars. But the nation that has walked with God and then departs from Him will find judgment coming down upon them. Because God is the way, the truth, and the life, more specifically Jesus Christ. And I'm not talking about the Mormon Jesus Christ. I mean, I like Glenn Beck just fine, but I don't want to say anything bad about Glenn. You know, Glenn's trying to do a good thing. He's trying to wake up the conservatives and the Christians in this country. It's a good thing. But I'm talking about the Jesus Christ of the New Testament, not of the Book of Mormon. I never could buy into the whole golden plates and the special goggles and the Jews that were apparently Indians and the massive civilizations for which there is no archaeological evidence. I could just never buy into that. But you know what? I was never an alcoholic so far at the bottom of the barrel that I would do anything to get out of it. And you know, when Glenn was at the bottom, apparently it was Mormonism, and I think it was his wife who scraped him up off the bottom. And so now, I mean, golden plates and goggles, whatever. You know, hey, I was drunk at the time. Anyways, we love Glenn Beck. I got no problems with Glenn, and I appreciate what he's doing. Now, how did I get off on this? I was talking about the war. Let's go back to the war, because I don't want you to start to feel too good. According to the Washington Post, last week, in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, the Justice Department said that no charges are either pending or contemplated with respect to a terrorist named al-Nashiri, who is the prime suspect in the bombing of the USS Cole. Yeah, they're not going to prosecute him. They just don't know what to do. Only two cases are moving forward down at Guantanamo Bay, and according to a motion to dismiss that was filed by Nashiri's attorney, there's a suggestion that the prospect for further military trials for detainees held at Gitmo has all but ground to a halt, much as the administration's plan to try the accused plotters of 9/11 in federal court has stalled. And so now we're down to we can't prosecute the fellow who bombed the Cole, which I'm all for not prosecuting him. I'm for taking him outside whatever shack we've got him in and putting a bullet in the back of his head. You know, once there's been some summary review of the evidence and military officials are convinced, he should just be shot in the head. And then the picture of him being shot in the head should be sent to all those Islamic websites so that they can post it. Tell them, go ahead, post. You like posting scary, you like posting chopping people's heads off? Well, here, post this. But we can't even figure out what to do with him. We're just feeding him and housing him and making sure that his room meets the Sharia requirements, I guess. Anyway, they say they're not going to prosecute. Well, maybe they're considering my advice. Maybe they're considering summary execution. Or perhaps Barack Obama, not unlike George W. Bush and so many of the presidents of the 20th century, late 20th century, it's just that we're incapable of waging war and we're incapable of executing justice. That's the more likely scenario, and that's kind of depressing. The IAEA, a fellow up there named Ali Heinonen, what's his name? Ali Heinonen, former chief of the UN Nuclear Inspections Worldwide, has told a French newspaper that Iran's uranium reserve represents a threat. Oh, thank you very much. He says the Islamic Republic now possess 3 tons of low-enriched uranium material, which can be used to obviously fuel their nuclear power plants or form the core of a bomb if Iran is able to refine this material much further. Ali Heinonen says, in theory, it's enough to make 1 or 2 nuclear arms. And he says, this constitutes a threat. Okay. Let's take a note. Iran, possibly a nuclear threat. Make note of that. You heard it here first. All right. Now, here's something interesting. Oh, by the way, that story was from, who was that? That was from Reuters. Thank you very much for all you drug addicts at the Reuters wire. Appreciate your efforts. From the Wall Street Journal, the top U.S. Marine general has made a sharp departure from the White House talking points on Afghanistan, saying President Barack Obama's promised July 2011 deadline to start withdrawing troops has given, quote, sustenance, unquote, to the Taliban. Marine Corps General James Conway told reporters, he said, we've intercepted communications that basically say, hey, you know, we only have to hold out for so long. So this is the chatter that the Marines are hearing from the Taliban on the ground in a fight for their lives. I mean, that's got to be depressing to be a Marine on the front lines in Afghanistan. Conway also said, quote, I honestly think that it will be a few years before conditions on the ground are such that turning over military operations to the Afghan army will be possible for us. Several years, a few years, he says. Folks, 10 years of current policy will not produce either victory or a stable government in Iraq. 100 years, 1,000 years of doing what we're doing is not going to produce what we need to produce in Afghanistan, which is utter total devastation of all Islamist terrorists. The total wiping them off the face of the earth, every single one of them, and driving any that remain so far out into the nether regions that you have to pump them sunshine. That's what we need. And we can keep doing what we're doing. You know, Barry Ho can keep directing the war from the golf course for the next 1,000 years. And in the end, it'll be the Taliban that wins. I am your host, Doug McBurney. We've got some breaking news that just crossed over the wire and has just made it to my desk. Apparently, Paris Hilton... Now, why are you laughing? Paris Hilton, this is hot off the wire. You're not going to hear this story anywhere else. Paris Hilton has declared that she will pledge her inheritance and as much of the family fortune as she can to helping unwed mothers, orphans, and children. She will donate it to ministries that help with adoption and help unwed mothers seek life. Have I misread? I've misread the story. I'm sorry. I misread it. Paris Hilton's been busted with cocaine in Las Vegas. I'm sorry. I'm not sure how I... You know, there was a time when... Jane Roe, Roe v. Wade, you remember her? There was a time when introducing a story about Jane Roe, it would have seemed ridiculous to think that Jane Roe could have ever come around. After all, she was at the center of the legalization of child murder in the country. But there was a preacher who got to her, Flip Benham. He got to her, she's converted now to Christianity, and she is pro-life. And so... anyway, I'm hoping someday a story crosses the wire and Paris Hilton somehow ran up against Flip Benham somewhere staggering around Las Vegas in the middle of the night. And the next morning, that story breaks the wire. Go get her. Go get her, Flip. All right. So, but yeah, apparently she, police followed vapor trails wafting from a Cadillac Escalade that smelled like marijuana. And out fell... She was probably sick. She may be suffering from glaucoma, from what we understand. Well, apparently out fell Paris Hilton and her latest boyfriend and a bag of cocaine. And that's just sad. The story here is from the AP. They say Paris Hilton is a prolific tweeter on Twitter, but oddly enough, she didn't mention her arrest on her Twitter account, although less than an hour after she was released, her Twitter account was updated with a posting that said she was in bed watching Family Guy.
Yeah.
Man, Flip, you better hurry up. I mean, Paris is... Paris is heading for a fall. All right. No, she's a tweeter, not a tweaker. A tweet. That's Twitter language. Anyway, some confusion here in the studio. We got that cleared up. All right. Let's move on now. Into that was the first story out of the culture file. But let's move deeper into the culture file, if we have the nerve. And I'm not sure that we do. Oh, man. So, yeah, okay, let's go to these. I want to talk about these Pakistan floods. If you've been watching, and this is a story from the AP, hundreds of thousands of Pakistanis have fled floodwaters after the River Indus smashed through two levees. And obviously Christians and even non-Christians around the world, they want to go and help. I mean, you see, it's just devastating to see women and children shivering and covered with mud. It's awful. It's awful. And these aid groups want to go in there, but according to the AP, just last week, the Taliban has issued a threat against any foreign aid workers who come into Pakistan to help the citizens there. And according to the AP, more than 8 million people are in need of emergency assistance across the country, yet the Taliban has issued a threat that will no doubt keep a number of aid agencies out of Afghanistan. And so, is this God's judgment upon the people of Pakistan? Well, it's not. God doesn't need to judge these people. They have the Taliban right there with them. Not unlike us here in America. God doesn't have to actively manufacture a process by which he executes judgment upon us. We've got the secular humanists right here in our midst. We've got the public education system. We've got Hollywood. We've got Barry Ho as the president of the United States. God doesn't have to orchestrate judgment. We'll bring it upon ourselves. All right. Now, deeper into the culture file. A spy at MI6, that's London's version of the CIA, and this was a low-level functionary there, not an actual 007 type guy, you know, with the radio watch and stuff. This was someone who processes paperwork for MI6, but his name was Gareth Williams, and he was murdered. His body, according to the Sun newspaper, lay undiscovered for 2 weeks in his flat after he was killed and his remains stuffed into a suitcase. Yeah. He was a cyclist. Not surprising there. And, they found some women's clothing in his apartment that apparently fit him. And it was well known that Mr. Williams was known to meet men at the capital's gay mecca of Vauxhall Cross and Soho in the West End. So here we've got a spy for MI6, who's found, murdered and stuffed into a suitcase. And the only question is, was he murdered by another spy or just some angry homo? Homos have a tendency to, a spurned homo is dangerous. Or, yeah, maybe who knows what he was into. Maybe there was a suitcase involved and things got out of hand. And before you know it, I mean, anything's possible. And that's the thing. You know, I don't hate homosexuals. I really don't. But I think that there are certain things that you do with your mind and your body that once you cross that Rubicon, it's virtually impossible to come back. And you set yourself up for incredible levels of danger. And so that's why homosexuality is a shameful thing, I think. And it's certainly something I don't want our children to be taught as some normal lifestyle choice. I'm sorry. That just does not compute. And, well, I guess that's all I'll say about that. I know a lot of people think I'm homophobic. And, you know, that homophobic technically would mean fear of homosexuals. And I'm not homophobic unless there's one really, like, close behind me. Then I might be a little paranoid, okay? Don't get me wrong. But I'm terrified of the idea that any deviant behavior would be taught to my children as normal. And frankly, I would be more terrified if my children were to begin thinking that adultery was normal. Because I think adultery is a far more corrosive sin in the culture than homosexuality. Yeah, if my kids were to be taught Paris Hilton was normal, that would be terrifying to me. I don't want that. I don't want that to be. I don't want deviant, destructive behavior to be taught as normal. And for some reason, people who are in utter rebellion against the creator of the universe, they develop this love for deviant, destructive behavior, even to their own detriment. It's sick. It's definitely sick. All right. Now, just a couple more from the culture file. We're about out of time, folks. I've got a Reuters story here. This is just disturbing. According to Reuters, the home of a woman filmed picking up a cat and throwing it into a garbage bin is under police guard after her actions sparked death threats. So this fella owns a cat. He happens to have video surveillance of his driveway because people have been vandalizing his car. And he catches this woman on video throwing his cat into a dumpster. And now the video has made it onto the internet, and the woman is fearing for her life. Yeah. It's yeah. They put the video on YouTube, and now death threats have come in against this woman. The cat survived and is fine. But this woman is absolutely terrified. Meanwhile, in Britain, as well as here in the United States, if you throw a baby into a garbage bin and it doesn't survive, Joy Behar wants to interview you about what a difficult life you've had. And she set up a foundation to raise money for you. And Katie Couric would be the keynote speaker at the first fundraising dinner for this poor woman. But throw a cat into a dumpster and you gotta have security. All right, one more for all of you people out there, and I know there's some in the audience who do not yet know the Creator, who have not yet realized that the destiny of your eternal soul depends on where you are with Jesus Christ. I know there's a number of you who don't realize that yet. Well, listen to this. From Statesville, North Carolina, a train was rounding a curve and approaching a trestle over Boston Creek just prior to Buffalo Shoals Road, there outside of Statesville, North Carolina, when the train struck a man on the trestle. The man, Christopher Kaiser, 29 years old, died at the scene, and two other people were injured. They were struck by a train. During the investigation, witnesses told deputies that the crowd had gathered at the site in hopes of seeing a ghost train. Yes, there's a legend, you see. The 12 people were amateur ghost hunters caught on the trestle when the train rounded the bend early last Friday morning and killed one of them. Folks, if you spend your life chasing ghosts, if you spend your life trying to find a way around the living God of the universe and the fact that He is the judge, well, you might end up getting struck by the living God. He'll come around the bend when you least expect Him. So stop chasing ghosts. There's only one God. There's only one story that makes any sense, and it's in the Bible. There's only one judge of the universe, and you will only have one opportunity to acquit yourself before Him, and you'd better have an advocate, and it had better be His Son, Jesus Christ, the Jesus Christ of the Scriptures. And I'll leave you with that advice, and I'll be back with you next week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com. Go there to hear some fantastic conservative radio broadcasts. I want to thank the folks at Personhood USA. And, of course, I want to thank my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.